And we are back, 329th installments of the Parish of the Patriots. I woke up today. I'm recording this on Tuesday. I've had a lot going on the last couple of weeks. And so I'm having to, this once again, I'm recording on the day of versus early on the weekends. And honestly, I woke up today not feeling well, like at all. I don't know if I got too hot working outside. Yes, I don't know. I don't know if I ate something, disagree. I do not feel real well today, but we're going to soldier through. We're going to get this show done. Of course, we will have our Christian specific segment at roughly the halfway point of the show. As always, I hope you'll stick around for that. I believe it's the best, most important part of the show. But yeah, I am feeling a little under the weather, but we're going to soldier through it anyway. I tell you, my tinnitus is screaming today. They must have cranked the 5G up on high. Yeah, chuckle. I don't know that I say stuff like that. I don't know, but I do know that some days it doesn't bother me. And then like today, I'm sitting here doing the show and it's like somebody is screaming in my ear. It is just, it's beyond, oh, I have a buzzing, a ringing in my ear. Anyway, y'all, I'm sorry. Y'all don't care about my tinnitus. Let's see here. If you do get something out of the show, don't be shy. I've had those ties. I have snail mail right here. You go to the description page for this show on Radio Albion. You can see there's the snail mail address. Drop something in an envelope. It's always very much appreciated. No, the crypto addresses are not mine. That's left over from Sven. So, yeah, it's just, you can discount that. Let's see here. Let's get into listener supporter mailbag. You can already tell I'm having a hard time keeping my thoughts together. GPD, sorry I'm so behind on support. This year has really gotten away from me, and it's been really hectic. I hope things are calmer in your world, and that's Jackie. Jackie, I left the middle part out because you know me. I'm abundantly cautious. The hero is overly cautious as an anime. And I'm like the podcaster is overly cautious. Very cautious about protecting y'all's anonymity. Well, yeah, no, I mean, it's like I say, I feel you. Because it's just been crazy for me. I've been really, really busy. Like I say, for the whole month of June, we're wrapping up. I guess we're July 1st now, aren't we? Dang. We are closer to next Christmas than last Christmas, if y'all can believe that. The entire month of June has been nuts for me. I've just been running and busy, doing a lot of traveling and trying to take care of stuff. Trying to hustle out here. I'm just on my grind. I'm trying to make a living. Trying to help family, man. All kinds of stuff. It's been crazy. So, yeah, no, it's been hectic for me, too. I feel you. I appreciate you taking the time out and dropping something in the mail. Next up here, GPD, I hope you're enjoying these hazy, lazy, crazy days of summer in the Lone Star State. Let's see. I'm skipping this part here because, again, I protect y'all's anonymity. I go out of my way, even though I know the odds of somebody somehow putting something together are nil. Anyway, best to you and continued thanks for the stalwart work and all the laughs these many years. And that's from Nick. On the in-between part, I hope things will continue to work out here. I really do. It's as crazy as become a part of life for all of us, you know? We talk about, I talk about people, we laugh because it's like, you talk to people now when you get up into a certain age, at least. And it's like, everybody has cancer, you know, everybody has cancer. You talk to somebody. I was talking to somebody yesterday and they were saying they ran into somebody I hadn't seen in years in the store. And they were like, well, how's it going? And they start talking about, you know, oh, well, you know, my wife has the cancer and everybody has a cancer. Because they're freaking poisoning us. I don't care what anybody says. They're poisoning us. That's why we have the cancer. You look around. When I was a kid, we hardly knew anybody that had cancer. When you heard about somebody having cancer, it was like shocking news because it was fairly rare. It's same with obesity and diabetics, you know? I remember being a kid and like, if you seen some fat person, we like kids, we looking and pointing and snickering because it's like seeing a circus freak out in the wild. And now it's just another day at Walmart. It's just another day. Got little kids that are all fat. excuse me, and have diabetes. It didn't used to be this way. Why now? Because they're poisoning us. They're poisoning us. I don't care what anybody says. They're poisoning us. Anyway, I watched an interesting snippets from an interview. And they were and a lot of y'all have probably seen this. If not, you can find it on YouTube. But that Peter Thiel guy, the Palantir guy, was being interviewed. If you haven't seen it, you know, if you have seen it, you know what I'm talking about. If not, you can look it up, whatever. But is another one of these transhumanist people, like all of these oligarchs are, all of these people are. They're obsessed with transhumanism, that they're that they're going to somehow transfer their consciousness into a computer. Spoiler alert, they're not. But I was thinking about this and this obsession they have, you know, with this idea of trying to live forever. Yeah, you know, the older you get, it seems odd, you know, and because, yes, we by instinct, we try to live as long as we can. But if you live old enough, if you live long enough and old enough, you know, all your body parts wear out and you get tired. And you just get fatigued with this world, you know. We always think we want a little more time. And then other times we think, man, I'm glad this life isn't any longer than what it is. Because it's the same bullshit over and over. And yet these people are obsessed with dragging it out as long as possible. Why? You know, so I saw somebody post a question about this. And, you know, my response is because they all want to make the deal, but none of them want to pay the bill. These people are in contract with the devil. I'm not being preachy early, but look, I've said this before. You know, I do the Christian specific segment separately, but some things you got to get into the spiritual nature about to understand them, because there's no way to explain it unless you understand it from this context. The ongoing warfare that's been taking place all this time since man first walked on this earth. You know, I'm 100% convinced all of these people with all this money and all this power and all of the, look, they made deals with the devil. I'm not saying like literally a demon appeared before them and they signed a contract in blood. That may be the case. But on one level or another, they have made the deal. And every day you get older, the time goes by. The bill is due. You know, let's say you went out and you bought your dream car. You went and bought a brand new dream car. This is, you dreamed of having this car your whole life, a Ferrari or a Lamborghini or whatever the hell. Now, you borrowed the money to get this car on a balloon note. You don't have to make payments. You're going to make one big payment. And you're driving that car every day. You're driving that car like, yeah, look at me. I'm somebody. But every day that goes by, you're getting a day closer to that balloon note. Now, you're 2 weeks away from the balloon note, and you don't want to pay it. So you're trying to come up with some kind of loophole in the contract. See, these people are obsessed with legalism. You ever notice how these people are all obsessed with word magic, legalese? Like they're going to trick God, you know, they're going to catch God in a technicality and he won't be able to cast them into hell. They could just use their word magic. They think they're going to sign a contract with the devil and then somehow get out of it at the last minute. You see, they gave their souls away, but if they can just upload their consciousness to a supercomputer, they won't ever have to pay the devil his due. They're going to pay. Spoiler alert. They're going to pay. They all want to make the deal, but they don't want to pay the bill. And the closer the bill comes due, the more they're trying to think of some way to wiggle out of it. It really is a fool's bet. Trading your soul. It was warned in the Bible. What does a man gain if he gains the whole entirety of the world? If you had the whole world literally under your feet, you were the man. What would you gain? if you lose your soul. Because as long as you're in this temporal realm, it's going to come to an end. 100% guaranteed, it is going to come to an end. And what you have is always borrowed. These people that make these deals, it's always a loan. I was thinking of how the way this works. Those who create the money own the money. As a part of usury, fractional reserve banking, and all of it, a fundamental aspect of it is that there's always going to be more money owed than there is in existence. Now, I think one of the elements of this that people miss is what this means is that all money out there eventually returns to the creators, to the banks, to the bankers. It returns to them. I was thinking, for whatever reason, I was thinking the other day of old Rush Limbaugh. He'd been dead for years now. And, you know, looking back, you know, and I hate to speak ill of the dead, but he got money, fame. I remember, you know, early on listening to that guy back in the 90s, and you never heard an alternative voice before. And, you know, it was refreshing hearing somebody with a different point of view than what you were always given. And then, of course, he became a complete shill for Israel and Israeli policy. And he got money, fame. He would often boast and brag. But like I said, he's dead now. He'd been dead for a while. Where did that money go? He doesn't have it anymore. You see, it just returns around because of the nature of debt. It's because there's always more owed than there is in existence. And that means any money given out is inevitably going to return to the ones who gave it to them. Does that make sense? In other words, I don't care how rich they go on. I don't care. Jeff Bezos, Elon Musk, they can talk about these super billionaire rich people. All of their money is on loan. They get to have it for a while. That's why people get bought off. They get bought off because they know the money's going to come back to them. They let this asshole walk around and be somebody for a while. People go along and say, this is the world's richest man. No, he's not. He's not the bank. He's not the Federal Reserve. That money will inevitably come back because more is owed than there is in existence. And that means the trajectory of all money is to return to the source. If that makes sense, it's all will inevitably return to the source. So they don't care. Yes, they'll buy people off and say, you can be rich, you can be famous, you can be a celebrity, you can be somebody. They don't care. That money's coming back to them. It costs them nothing. And those who make the deal, it costs them their very soul. So it's not surprising as the clock starts running out and the money's going to go back where it came from, and the bill is due on their soul, that they try to get out of it. They become obsessed with this transhumanistic idea. They're gonna somehow transfer their consciousness to the cloud, to the World Wide Web. I think it'd be kind of, they can't, by the way. I don't believe in any of that shit. But it would be funny. I was just thinking it would be funny if they could, and it wasn't like what they imagined, you know? I mean, imagine you're one of these guys, like this Peter Thiel guy, and you figure it out, and you hook this thing up and transfer your consciousness to a computer. Again, it's stupid. But imagine they could. You're at the mercy. You know where I'm going with this. So you're at the mercy of whoever's maintaining the server, right? And you transfer, you suddenly become aware, hey, I'm still in existence on this server. You can't do anything, but hey, you're here. Now I got to figure out what to do next. But the problem, you're like, hey, how come nothing is working like I thought it would? It's because your server is now all run by Indians. You're all run by Indians. You literally transferred your consciousness to a server that's being maintained by a bunch of Indians. And instead of your conscious ruling the world, your consciousness is being manipulated to run some kind of scam on old people. Some kind of scam on old people or something. Wait a minute, this isn't what I imagined. That's the problem with these deals with the devil. It's never what they imagine. They always hear the good part. They always hear what they want to hear. That's what makes it an easy sell. But eventually the bills do. Then they want to wheedle out of it. They're not. They're going to wheedle out. Devil going to get his due. And they're going to face the judgment. There's different levels of this. Some people get bought out cheaper, you know. They sell off a lot cheaper. They sell themselves out a lot cheaper than others. Some cost a little more money. Again, it's irrelevant because the money's going to come back where it came from anyway. It just makes a circle. But it inevitably flows back into the original hands that issued it. Celebrity. I tell you, these celebrities, everything in this country is fake and on some level gay. It is fake. These celebrities, it amazes me how fake everything is. I remember when I was a kid, when I was a young person in my teens, I went to my first concert. And I'd never been to a music concert before. And I went and saw one of my favorite singers at the time. And what struck me is how shitty it was. I'd listened to this person's album over and over, and I really liked it. Loved the music. And then I go to this concert, and I'm like, this sucks. This just sounds like me singing in the shower or something, because they don't have all the fancy stuff. They're just up there on a stage and a little Coliseum thing that's got bad acoustics, and they up there singing, probably half drunk, and then take another break, wander off the stage. It was disappointing. I was very disappointed. But you know what? It was real. That's what a real concert sounds like. I was watching the ridiculous morning news narrative the other day, and they were talking about something somewhere, and they're like, Taylor Swift had a surprise concert for everybody in attendance. These people are running around, and she's jumping around up there, and the singing was just like off her album. That's because it's the same singing. She's up there dancing around, lip syncing and shit. She ain't singing. I can guarantee you, because I've been to concerts before where people actually sing and perform, and it sucks. You know, I remember I went home and I was like, I told everybody, I'm like, well, they're like, how'd you enjoy the concert? I'm like, it sucks. I like the album. I like the song. I like the singers, but it was nothing like here and there. And they're like, okay, well, yeah, because they're not, those are recorded in a recording studio with perfect acoustics, and they got all the perfect background instruments and the singers and everything. You just listen to this dude up there with his guitar. Oh, Taylor Swift had a surprise concert. And it's like, oh, the music sounds perfect. Oh, that's because it's all recorded. She had no concert. She went up there and danced around. You know, waved her guitar around. She wouldn't play no damn guitar. You know, now all of a sudden Beyonce is a country singer. Just because. Why not? That's one thing we needed. I saw this deal. And she's at this show, and you all probably seen it because it's on the news. And she on this big car, this big prop that looks like a big car in her cowgirl outfit. And they swinging it through the air, and they had a malfunction, and they had to bring the thing down. But that's beside the point. She up here on this car prop, and this thing swinging around. And supposedly she's up there singing this song while she's on this thing swinging around. No. No, she's not. They just play the background track. Where's the band? Where's the band at? There ain't no band. Because they're just playing the record track. Why's she up there just swinging around on this prop with her cowboy hat on? She all about the cattle and shit. Fake. You can't go to a concert anymore unless you go see some little guy. I can't go to a concert anymore because all the singers I like are dead. They're all dead now. I can't go to a concert. They're all dead now. But you can't. You can't go to a concert. You're going to go to a lip-syncing show. The music, I guess, would be better. But, you know, there's something about hearing the person perform live. That's why you go to a concert. I don't understand the idea of going to a concert and you sitting up in the nosebleed seats and you can kind of make this person out down there and they swinging around dancing and jumping up and down. Look, you dancing all around like that, you couldn't sing if you wanted to because you're going to be out of breath. I ain't saying they ain't putting effort in. I'm not running down the fact that they are putting on a show. You know, they're putting on a show. But it ain't no concert. A concert means you singing. They're not singing. They're just dancing. They're just putting on a show. I wonder how many of these, they're not even there. No, seriously. You follow through common sense. You pack, I'm just going to use Beyonce. I'm not saying like I'm accusing them of this or anything, this person of this. But I'm just saying, look, they put on these shows in a huge stadium or a huge coliseum, whatever. 99.999% of the people can't even see. They can see someone's down there and they can hear the music blasting through the speakers, the pre-recorded music. But if that was just somebody in a Beyonce wig wearing the cowboy hat, how are you going to know the difference? Beyonce back at home, chilling. Maybe she got a headache and didn't feel like going that day. You ain't going to know the difference. They're just going to put somebody out there. You're not going to know. I wonder how many times that happens, because I can just about guarantee you it happens. You done paid to see a show, because it ain't a concert. You done paid to see a show, and you ain't even see the person perform. You just seen their body double out there dancing around. Hell, you up there, they look like a speck anyway, so what damn difference does it make to you? You could just stayed home, saved your damn money, listen to the album, if that's what you want to do. And these tickets. I think the first concert I went to, I think the tickets were $20 a piece. And now I seen a deal and they were talking about somebody concert. And they were like, you know, well, basically the nosebleed seats are $150 to listen to the album track. To see somebody dancing around on the stage as you can't even tell if that's even them or not. People are crazy. How the hell did I get off on that? How in the hell did I get off on this? It's just my observation. It's once again reflected on the fact that I'm loathe to discuss politics. So I wind up discussing stuff like this. Fake concerts. The fake nature of everything in this world, in this country. Fake concerts, fake celebrities, fake success stories. All fake. They all made a deal. None of them want to pay the bill when it comes due. They think it's a good deal at the time, but ain't none of them want to pay the bill. Inevitably, the bill is going to come due. Let's go ahead. You know what we're doing? Let's go ahead and get in the Christian specific segment. I got several things I want to get into, and I want to be sure I have plenty of time to do that. So let's go. You know what to do. Get in there, fill those pews. Let's get into this week's sermon, The Parish of the Patriots. As you may or may not know, I've come to have a deep-seated hatred for ideologies. They just seemed like self-imposed restrictions, boxes. And yet, people seem to long for an ideology that's going to answer all of their questions. I was thinking about this the other day, and of course, this is the Christian-specific segment. So we're going to apply this desire for ideologies to be the answer in the religious context. Because I was thinking of this because we know we're all familiar with political ideologies, and people have a political ideology. They check the box. This is going to be my political belief. It's funny because they do this as, you know, it's kind of like if you were asked a question and you're only given three possible answers and you're never supposed to step back and ask, well, why are there only three answers to this question? Maybe this was part of the training all those years we were in school and we always got multiple choice questions. Remember you as a kid and it was like they hand out the test and you're like, yes, it's multiple choice. But yet that trains you never to step back and go, well, ask the question, you know, why are we only being presented with three possible answers when perhaps there could be many more? People like political ideologies because they pick one and you check the box and everything has to fit in the box. Of course, the problem here lies in that it's impossible to have an ideology that's going to cover every possible scenario. And that's true politically. And it's true when it comes to religion. Religious ideology is like the opposite of walking in faith. Now, I mean, I get that you can't just have people running around deciding for themselves what the truth is. But yet, we have all these ideologies, and that's basically what we have, don't we? I mean, of course, obviously, I'm speaking particularly towards Protestantism. That's what I'm familiar with. If you want to know about the Orthodox Church, Dr. Johnson's your guy to go to. So I'm not trying to lump everybody. I'm not Catholic either. So, you know, this, if you want those topics, you'll have to go to him. But Christianity, Protestant Christianity today is like an all-you-can-eat buffet. I mean, what flavor do you want? Do you want the anything goes flavor? They got a church. We got a church for that. Do you want the modern nation state of Israel or the Israel of the Bible because of the same name? We got plenty of that too. You can get down to minute details. I'm sure I've talked about this before. I talk about so much that I lose track of what I've talked about. But, you know, we have all these, you know, growing up, we had all these different, you know, churches in town. And then you find out, you know, because you're under this impression that, you know, there's such a huge difference. And then you find out they're actually very small differences. Like I say, I'm pretty sure I've talked about that before. But everybody latches on to an ideology. And I was thinking about this in relation to the early writings of the apostles, the early church, and them dealing with people who wanted to basically just turn it into being back under the law again, you know, and you know, oh, well, it's great and all. They came and accepted Jesus, but now they've got to be circumcised. You know, they were dealing with this all the way back then. And I was thinking, that's just human nature. You see, those people that were wanting to reestablish and force everybody back under the law, they want the structure of that ideology. You see, if you have an ideology, nothing's your fault. You follow the ideology, you stay in the box, you check to this box, often as long as you stay in the box, you're good to go. It doesn't take really that much effort on your part. You explain it with the ideology. Why did you do that? Doesn't that seem kind of sinful? Oh, no. Let me explain to you. Pull out the ideology. I'm within the box, within the framework. You can't get to know Jesus through an ideology, through a box. If people could come to salvation through the law, and there's so much written in the New Testament about this, but if salvation could come through the law, or if you prefer, an ideology, then Jesus would not have had to come and be crucified, would he? We come to a knowledge of the Lord through faith. What does that mean? What means our daily actions? Seeking him. People don't like that. It's scary. If you're having to pray and seek God's will and try and struggle each and every day, you read your Bible and you try to come to understand him into a greater knowledge of him, that's a lot of effort. And you might screw it up. In fact, I guarantee you're going to screw it up at some point. We all have. You see, contrary, again, like I said before, you have this all you can eat. What version of Christianity do you want? As long as you accept Jesus, anything goes. We got plenty of that. The truth of the matter is walking in faith actually takes a lot of effort because there's so much you don't know. And it requires praying and seeking and trying to grow and understand him. And as you do so, you know, you come to where you instinctively do have answers to certain situations, what you should do, what's the correct step moving forward. But it's hard. Getting back under the law, in other words, boxing yourself back into an ideology, that's easy. Just follow the rules. And like I say, in the early church, when you read in the New Testament, they dealt with the same thing. You'd have some group of people say, well, it's all great. These people are coming to be saved, but they're going to have to be circumcised. Otherwise, they're not really saved. And there'd be a big uproar. We see these were people trying to reestablish an ideology. They're trying to reestablish, okay, let's get some rules. And the early apostles warned against this, attempting to go back under the law when you're set free from the law. Not set free from the tenets of the law, as in suddenly sin no longer exists. It's not, you're not under the ideology. You're not stuck in the box. Seeking the Lord means having to be able to free up your mind and try to come to understand Him, trying to grow in knowledge. You know, winging it, as it were. Well, you're not really. That's not really correct. Because again, this is accompanied by reading your Bible, studying, trying to understand. You know, if you have access to preachers or teachers that seem to know what they're talking about, listening to that. You know, but it's just an easier road if you can create a box. These are the rules we follow. And as long as we follow those rules, everything's fine. The problem with that is, just like ideologies and politics, it's impossible for an ideology to cover every potential situation. That's why we have jury trials here in the U.S. The founders understood that, you know, you can pass all these laws in the world, but when you pass a law, there's going to be circumstances to where, you know, the law shouldn't apply here, because common sense tells you, well, yeah, technically this person violated the law, but in this instance, it was kind of justified. It's understandable. And juries are supposed to nullify those cases and find the person not guilty, even though technically, you know, they violated the law. Now, those days are pretty much gone. They browbeat jury members and tell them they're not allowed to do that, which is a lie. But they browbeat them, tell them that even if they don't think it's right, they've got to find the person guilty because they violated the law. They stepped outside of the box. You can't have rules and laws that are going to neatly apply to every situation, because there's just so many possibilities. There's so many different scenarios that can pop up. You can't have a law written beforehand that can envision every possibility. It's just not possible. Our court systems are just a picture of injustice. I mean, we know this. They just imagine. Of course, nobody would go for it because it's scary to them. But just imagine if you said, okay, this is what we're going to do. We got too many laws on the books as it is. So somebody can go to trial and we'll hear both sides, the circumstances, and the jury can simply decide whether or not what that person did was reasonable. Not whether or not it fit within the rule book. The letter that some guy in Washington, D.C., the letter of the law some guy in Washington, D.C. wrote. But we'll take in the entirety of the circumstances. If you propose that, people would run backwards and tell you that you can't have that. It does sound kind of crazy. But at the same time, would we have less justice in this system than we have now? You know, I don't think we would. The faith works like that. God is all encompassing. When you're walking in the faith, the general rule, the general knowledge of the Lord is what propels you forward. This is what it means when it's written that God's laws wind up written on your heart. You're not going out and being a whoremonger, an adulterer, a drunkard. You're not going out and doing all of those things. You're not necessarily trying to follow an ideology in a rule book, but because you're coming to know and walk with the Lord, you just simply don't do those things. And in the end, this is actually easier when you think about it. If you just impose rules on yourself, and the reality is you really want to do that. You know, you really want to commit this sin, but this rule book is hanging over your head. And so you're constantly doing this back and forth, weighing this and the consequences of this. And maybe I could get away with it. You see, you're always doomed for failure in that scenario. As you walk with the Lord and come to know the Lord, that becomes instinctual, so it's easier to overcome. You know, you're not going to go try to bang your neighbor's wife. It's just something you don't even consider. It doesn't even come up in your thought process. Why? Because your heart is set on the Lord. Not because you're following a rule book. As you get older, by the way, I'm covering several different things here. This is me moving on to another topic. So you're not sitting there going, wait, what's he going on about now? As you get older, one of the things you come to despise is wasting your time. It has become one of my absolute pet peeves. When you're younger, you feel like you got a lot of time to waste. The older you get, you don't have no time to waste. Time becomes a more precious commodity. When we think of the devil, temptation, and sin, I mean, there's things that are, they're wrong, blatantly wrong on their face, but there are layers, there are other elements to it. Now, when you think about one of the aspects of sin and the way the devil tempts you in sin, and one of the things that I think really makes certain things a sin is that you're wasting your time. You're wasting your time. The Greek word for sin refers to like archery and you miss the target. It's missing the mark. And I think that's just a really good way to think about these things. You're missing the mark. You're wasting your time. You're not getting where you need to be. You're not shooting the target. You're flinging arrows all over the place and acting a fool. Devil gets us to waste our time. It's a limited commodity. And the more of our time we waste on nonsensical things, you see. Because, I mean, let's put it a different way. You have things that are just obviously destructive and sinful on their face. You know, if you go out and murder somebody, that's pretty, nobody has to tell you that's a sin. I mean, you could go to the most non-believing hardcore atheist in the world and ask him, was it wrong to kill somebody? And you would hope that more than likely they would say, well, yeah, that's wrong. They wouldn't classify it as sin, but instinctively they would know if you just go out and murder somebody in cold blood that that's wrong. But you get into things that are a little more of a gray area. Well, what makes that a sin? And I think one of the elements is that of wasting your time. You see, the more time the devil can get you to spend on frivolous things, frivolities, stupid stuff, things of no consequence. You see, you don't look at those things and go, oh, wow, that's so sinful. I got to not do that. You know what I mean? Those things are pretty, in a lot of ways, easier to recognize and deal with. You know, if you drink too much and the next day you got to go do that apology tour, we all know what we're talking about here. You know, you go out with friends and you have drinks, only you had too many drinks. And then you wake up the next day and you're like, oh, hell, did I really say that to everybody? Did I really do that? Then you got to make the walk of shame, the call of shame. You got to make the apology tour where you go around I said all that about you and they looking at you like, yeah, now I know how you really feel, but I totally don't really feel that way. And ain't nobody going to believe you. But there's so many things that are just time wasting. And every minute that goes by, and like I say, this becomes more readily apparent the older you get. Every minute, every moment, every hour, every day that goes by, you're never getting it back. If the devil can get you to spend 265 days a year wasting your time, maybe not doing hardcore, awful, appalling sin, but simply wasting your time, not seeking the Lord, not fulfilling God's purpose for you. If he can get you to do that, you're never getting it back. You wake up one day, you're old, and you can't get the time back. And now you can't recover it. All of those years that you wasted that time on things that are meaningless, now you can't get it back. You want to, but you can't. You can't go reel it back. See, the devil has stolen it from you by getting you, because the devil always gives you a choice, by getting you to spend your time running around in circles, chasing meaningless things. This is mode of operandi. It gives you a choice. You choose these meaningless and worldly things. And once, and every minute you spend doing that is a minute you're never getting back. Don't waste your time. Don't let the devil rob you of your time. If you're young, you think you have a lot. I know I say this a lot because it's just a warning. Trust me, you don't know. Don't know how much time you've got. You don't want to waste it. I'm going to go ahead and move into another topic. And this kind of relates back to the ideologies and things. And we talked, I believe it was last week, you know, we talk about these Christians, these people who, you know, conflate because they're so ignorant about the Bible. Again, this relates back to ideologies. They want to check off the ideology, and then their preacher tells them, well, we have to bless Israel because, you know, the Old Testament. They don't want to undertake actually reading the entirety of the Bible as a lifelong work. You're never done with it. It's not something you read through the whole thing one time and now you get it. It's a lifelong work. And want to do that. They want the ideology. They want the guy to tell them, well, see right here, God says you got to bless Israel. Because these people are somehow the same people that you read about in the Old Testament. Obviously, they're not. Now, when you point out that they're not, you can kind of get off into the woods. You know, in the New Testament, you're warned about getting into meaningless arguments over genealogies. And I think we have to be very wary of this. And yet, it's something worth, on this topic, it's something worth addressing. And I've addressed it before, and I'm addressing it again here now. Because it is such a cancerous heresy among Christian believers. These people who have been led astray and hoodwinked on this notion that these people occupying that part of the world now somehow have something to do with these people, the Bible. Now, the problem is when you get into explaining this, sometimes you sound like you're having it both ways. You know, you talk about the Pharisees and Jesus, you know, pointing out that they are not children of Abraham, and they're said, and people say, well, yeah, you're trying to have it both ways. You know, are they? Aren't they? Again, a lot of people try to put me in the box of Christian identity. And again, I think it's another ideology trap. I don't really put myself in that box. I agree with some aspects of that. But when you inevitably go, oh, well, so I'm saved because white people are the ancient Israelites. And you kind of fall back into a trap. Look, you're going to have to put the work in faith. There's no easy way around it. The thing about it is the more you do it, the easier it becomes and the more it becomes a labor of love. You know, it can be difficult, but as you do make progress and if you put the effort in, you will inevitably make progress. It becomes a pleasure. It becomes something you really enjoy when you get new revelation, come to new understandings. Now, I'm kind of getting off topic of what I wanted to get onto here, addressing these people and the argument that those who are occupying this part of the world now in this modern nation state of Israel somehow have something to do with the Bible and making this argument that these are the same people, so they're owed this because God said so. I was reading the 106th Psalm the other day, and I thought this was really interesting. And yes, it was written so long ago, and yet it applies today. You can apply it today. And it amazes me because it comes back to the same thing. Now, for those who would argue that, no, these are the same people, you could trace them back to the ancient Israelites. Let's just hand that to them for a minute. Instead of always trying to argue with them, these aren't the same people. If you just give them that, say, okay, you know what? We're going to say you're right. I don't think you're right, but let's say you're right for a minute, for the sake of argument as it goes. When you examine what's in the Bible, even their own argument quickly falls apart. It does. If you look in the 106th Psalm, let's see here. We're going to look at, we're going to start at verse 34. I'll read down here, Yefar, because the author is speaking about the history. He's kind of going through the history of ancient Israel and the many times they provoked God to anger. Now, this particular little passage here is really illustrating This is an, I think this is a good example of how you can take these people and instead of going off into the woods of these aren't the ancient Israelites, sometimes you can just say, okay, let's say you're right. What does that have to do with anything? Let's start with verse 34. Let's back up. I'm sorry. We're going to start at verse 33. Because they provoked his spirit so that he spake unadvisedly with his lips. They did not destroy the nations concerning whom the Lord commanded them. Now, I'm going to stop there. This is one of the things that people don't understand about the Old Testament. When they look at these people, I'm talking about these Christian Zionist rapture people. When they look at the Palestinians being slaughtered by the modern nation state of Israel, they remember parts of the Bible where God commanded the Israelites, they weren't called Israelis, you'll note, to wipe out an entire people. He'd say, you go in there, you kill every man, woman, child, you don't have anything, you burn the city to the ground. And they look at that and say, well, they're just doing what God told them to do. Who can forget Netanyahu standing up there looking disgusting, talking about Amalek. Amalek, we are commanded to destroy Amalek. Yeah. You know, people, because they're ignorant about the Bible, they have a vague memory, especially Old Testament. They have a vague recollection of certain passages in the Bible that they struggle with because they don't understand it, because you have to spend an entire lifetime reading the Bible and studying the Bible to understand the whole thing. And they're like, well, yeah, it's bad that maybe it looks bad that they're slaughtering the Palestinians and doing these horrible things. But, you know, God told them just to wipe all these people out. So really, they're doing what God, they do what God said. We're going to come back to that here in a minute. They did not destroy the nations concerning whom the Lord commanded them, but were mingled among the heathen and learned their works. Mingled among the heathen. In other words, God told them to go and wipe all these people out. Okay, I'll just go ahead and say it now. That's because these were not people per se. These were from somewhere else. We've talked before about how not everyone here on this earth is a child of God. That always offends so many MCC members who say everybody on this earth is a child of God and can be saved by Jesus. No, some are weeds, some are wheat. There are people who are not created in the image of God. I believe these people referenced here, we have archaeological evidence of freaking giants existing. They have dug up bones. We have it recorded in the Bible. Guys who were like 9 foot, I don't mean like old basketball players. I mean like 9, 10 foot tall dudes. And they've dug up some of these bones that confirm what's in the Bible. What the hell is a 10 foot dude? That is not a human being. That's something else. So when God said, well, go in here and wipe these people out, there weren't people like you and me. They were planted here by other beings. By other entities, we'll put it that way. No, I don't mean space aliens either. Okay. But they were mingled among the heathen and learned their works. In other words, instead of going in and wiping out these non-human humans, they went in and started breeding with them. That's what mingled with them means. They weren't hanging out. They didn't go show up and start having a tea social with these people. It means they went and started breeding with their women and letting their men breed their daughters. Intermingling. We would call it race mixing, but it goes beyond race. This is like species mixing. So when God told them to go wipe all these people out, but instead, they intermingled. They started breeding with them. And of course, what? They learned their works. When you intermingle with them, because then they become family and you start picking up their habits. And they served their idols, which were a snare unto them. Average Christian thinks when they read something like that about these people's idols, they picture a little statue and these people would go in there and bow down to the statue, and God got so mad because they're bowing down to their statue. These people would carve out an image out of wood and then bow down to it, and see, that really made God mad. Oh no, there's a whole lot more to it than bowing down to a little wooden statue. Yea, they sacrificed their sons and their daughters unto devils. And shed in unto devils. That gives you a hint of where those people came from. Now, I said they came from other beings, other entities, not space aliens. They sacrificed their sons and daughters unto devils. And shed innocent blood, even the blood of their sons and daughters, whom they sacrificed unto the idols of Canaan, and the land was polluted with blood. Child sacrifice. Sounds familiar, doesn't it? All of these centuries later, it comes down to that, doesn't it? So, several points here. First off, staying on topic, which is always hard for me, I admit it. You can give people that want to argue that these are the ancient Israelites. You can step back and say, you know what? Instead of arguing that point, let's give you that point. You can read this passage here, and guess what? They interbred with the Canaanites. I tell you, but if you intermingle with a people, then you have just as much of their blood and genetics and DNA in you than you had of your ancestors. Make sense? So we say, okay, well, then explain this passage. If they intermingled with the Canaanites, then that means, even if you want to make the argument this is somehow related to ancient Israel, we read right here that they went in and interbred with the Canaanites. So they're going to have just as much Canaanite blood in them as Israelite blood. Are they going to argue that God's promise somehow applies to their half? If they were back then, their half of them that was Israelite, but not their Canaanite half? Fast forward centuries later, how much Canaanite, how much Israelite? You see, this whole argument, these are the same people, so you have to apply God's promise to Abraham, which is something else. We're not going to go there today. We're not going to have time for that. But anyway, you somehow have to apply it to these people. When right here in the Bible, it says that the first thing they did was go in and start interbreeding with these people. If they interbreed, they mixed with them, then they have Canaanite blood in them. God didn't make no promise to the Canaanites. He told them to go kill the Canaanites. Why? Because they did things like burn their children alive while they had an orgy on the temple floor. It always comes back to this. When I hear things that people dismiss as kooky conspiracy stuff, like Pizzagate, for instance, you see these people and they have a picture. You know, oh, they're doing an interview with this guy. And he's sitting in his living room and, oh, he has his artwork back there. And it's a picture depicting children being tortured to death, tied down to a table and people eating their guts or some weird, disgusting shit. They're telling you out in the open. Like people say, the revelation of the method. They're telling you who they are. It's in your face. They just have weird taste in art. Look. I said this before, I'll say it again. Ain't nobody, if you walked into my house and instead of a picture of a pretty, you know, a painting of a, you know, a snowy village morning by a river, there was a picture, there was a painting depicting children hanging in a meat locker like sides of beef, you would say, hey, Dan, you're some kind of freaking weirdo. What's your problem? Why would you even want something like that in your house? That's disturbing. You wouldn't dismiss it. And people dismiss it with these people. I don't care. I don't have to have evidence. I know these people are involved in child sacrifice. Why? Because all the way back there, they were infatuated with sacrificing the innocent blood to their devils. It's the same spiritual battle. Trust me, you don't have to sit there. You don't have to believe the debunkers. There's no evidence that they're doing ritualistic child sacrifice. Trust me, they're doing ritualistic child sacrifice. Because you go all the way back to the Canaanites. Guess what they were doing? Ritualistic child sacrifice. They believed they'd get more money. You just got to take your firstborn sons and daughters and throw them into a fire. And while they're screaming and burning to death, you have an orgy on the temple, in the temple. It's a great time. And that means you'll get more money. This is totally, totally worth it. Now, when you consider this same practice in various forms, and I think in its literal form among the elite, but in its various form, this same practice is still an obsession in this world today. Why do you think God said to wipe them out? Nobody, God was being so mean. There were some innocent ones. They weren't human. They were sacrificing to devils because that's who made them. This is not hard to understand. God did not create those people. They were sacrificing to devils because that's who they are. That's who made them. We worship the Lord. We seek God. We find salvation in Jesus Christ because we're made in the image of God. These people were not. They were put here by devils, and that's why they would do these sacrifices to devils. That's why God told the Israelites, you go in and wipe them out. They don't have a place in this world that I created for you. But they didn't. Instead, well, their women look pretty good to me. Let's breed them. And the next thing you know, they're sacrificing their sons and daughters, burning them alive, and having an orgy in the temple. When you get to the very brutality of it, you're just like, well, no wonder God said to wipe all these people out, huh? But they didn't, and we're still, on some level or another, dealing with it today. Anyway, I need to wrap up. But when one of these people says, oh, no, these people for sure, you know, they're the ancient Israelites. Let them read the 106th Psalm. If they mingled with them, they weren't hanging out and having so that means they interbred with them. Then that means they carry the Canaanite blood, which means what? God didn't make no promise to the Canaanites. In other words, their argument falls apart quickly under the weight of the 106th Psalm. It does. It falls apart because it's witnessed right there that they intermingle. Once they mixed like that with these Canaanites. And again, I want to be clear. This wasn't just simply another race of people. Because mixing, you know, intermingling, mixing with these people, everybody thinks now in terms of race. This went beyond race. These were not actual humans. They were created by devils. That's why they were sacrificing to devils. Anyway, you can point to this and the whole argument that, oh, well, these are the same people. So, you know, God promised them everything or whatever. It falls apart real, real quickly. Also worth noting, because I was talking about these things here. When you talk about, you know, I said the elite, you have these people in high positions. And I said, I'm 100% convinced. Yes, they do child sacrifice rituals. I absolutely believe that. I think anybody with any common sense believes that. I'm not just saying, you know, applying it to this modern nation state of Israel or even Jews. I'm talking about this whole cadre. You know, when we, I don't think, in other words, I guess what I'm saying is, I'm not trying to make the claim that the average Israeli is going and partaking in child sacrifice or something. That would be silly. But we're talking about the silliness of this notion that, oh, same people, it falls apart. Because it says right here that, no, they went and intermingled. So now they've got all these other people's background there, their genetics with them. And again, I do think those who wield power today, it follows that same thing. They sacrifice their sons and daughters because they believe they would get wealth and power. And I believe that these people today, these elites that wield power, they're following the same thing. It's the same program all the way back to these Canaanites. It's not hard to see why God said to wipe them out. We're going to wrap up on that note. I hope you enjoyed today's show. I appreciate you taking the time out to join us, to listen in. Dr. Johnson will be here tomorrow with the Orthodox Nationalist, and he'll wrap us up on Thursday with his Daily Nationalist. I hope you'll check that out as well. Hope you enjoy the rest of your week. And as always, I hope to see you here next week for the Parish of the Patriots.